Sophia Ellis lives her life in full throttle. A powerlifter, personal trainer, yoga instructor, and she is just wrapping up her university degree. Effectively, there's always somewhere she has to be. But all of these things become all the more amazing when you hear her backstory, which is a life dominated by bulimia and anorexia. The Southend-based powerlifter was only released from the Maudsley Hospital in London in 2017, but has turned to sport and exercise to help her in her recovery. She maintained that she was tired of feeling weak, and she has more than bounced back. With her Instagram profile, Sophia is providing inspiration for vegans and others who have had to deal with eating disorders and mental health problems on a daily basis. But she won't be stopping at just that. With many more exciting things in the pipeline, including a trip to Tanzania to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, Sophia Ellis is now a full-on inspiration for people everywhere. Sophia, a very warm welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for coming on to tell your amazing story. It's something a number of publications have picked up and covered, and I've covered it myself as well. But first off, how are you on this very sunny Sunday afternoon?
I'm really good, thank you. Thank you for having me on as well.
No, that's always good, and thank you so much for coming on as well and being part of the Mental Health Awareness Week special podcast we've got in the pipeline. And looking at you now, we see a 22-year-old personal trainer, yoga instructor, vegan powerlifter, and someone on the brink of completing their university degree. But your journey to where you are now is really quite something, and is primarily dominated by eating disorders, namely bulimia and anorexia.
Yeah.
So when did it first dawn on you that there was a severe problem there?
I think it first occurred when I found myself basically running off, like burning off everything that I was eating. So I knew that there was a problem when, obviously, my physical aspect, I was very underweight, but it was when other people started being concerned about me that I thought, okay, there's a problem, basically, because if other people are noticing that I'm very, very thin, or there's certain things that I'm doing that isn't right, and then I realised, right, I need to change this, and there is something in my head that needs to get sorted, basically.
Exactly. So you mentioned the running off your food aspect. You were diagnosed with exercise
bulimia. Yes, yeah.
How does that then develop into kind of the full-on anorexia?
Yeah, so basically first started with orthorexia. So orthorexia is basically where it's like you go a bit OTT with the healthy diet kind of thing. So you eliminate like fats, carbs. It's almost like the pre to the anorexia, basically. So I was first diagnosed with the orthorexia, and then it went into the exercise bulimia, where, because I was very much into my running, like I've always been into sports. But yeah, so I'd eat something, and then as soon I knew the calories for it, and then I'd just burn off what I'd just eaten. And I'd do this even at, like, say midnight. If I'd eaten something before, then I'd have to just go on a long run to burn it off. So yeah,
was that your brain telling you that you had to go out for
that
run? Yeah,
it was almost like a fixation on, like, oh my god, like I've consumed this, I need to get rid of it, in a way. So that it's almost like it is a form of bulimia, but you're not purging, you're running it off or exercising it off instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then when you moved away from your home in Southend to Brighton, that was the first time I think you've been away from home properly.
Yeah.
And that's when things kind of take a little bit of a nosedive, a turn for the worse.
It got really bad because obviously with the anorexia, it was a controlling thing. It wasn't about what I looked like. It was to have control. And the only way I could have control in my life was to control my body weight and what I put inside me. I was able to control things, what I ate, like to an extent. But obviously my mum was still living at home with me, so she was able to control a few things as well.
She could monitor it herself.
Yeah, basically. So as soon as I left home and I was living by myself, I had full control. So I could literally go for a whole day without eating hardly anything. Like, I'd go just eating an apple a day. Do you know what I mean? So that's when it got really bad.
Yeah. Why did you need that control in your life? Why do you think you needed it so much?
So because of my past history of what happened, so when my dad got, after he got stabbed by a burglar, I had to be his full-time carer. And then I was also studying for A-levels at the time. I had three jobs. I was looking after my younger brother as well, just because like he was going through stuff. So it was a lot to take on when I was 16. And so it was very unstructured. I had a very unstructured past as well with things that happened when I was a child. So I think it all just kind of hit me that the only thing that I could control in my life was this. And then, yeah, it just went downhill from there, basically.
Because hearing you talk about that, that's a lot of stuff to deal with at a very young age. Does that just overwhelm you? And you just can't cope because you're just drowning the entire time.
Totally. And it's just, I never felt like I've had like a normal family living anyway or upbringing. And then, because my dad's quite old anyways, but then for him to be stabbed, go through like a triple heart bypass and be his full-time carer, like having to dress, wash my dad, clean him, like make his meals for him. It's just not something that a 16-year-old should be doing whilst they're doing their A-levels and etc. And obviously it took a big mental hit as well, because seeing someone that you love and seeing their health just deteriorate so much, you feel like almost you can't do enough for them. So I took it out on myself.
Do you feel helpless in that situation?
Yeah, totally. Like, you can only do so much, but then, yeah, that feeling of just, like, knowing that you can't do anything, it just kills you.
Yeah. I suppose the idea that you're the only one that can help.
Yeah.
But what you need to do to help is, like, it's beyond your powers of ability.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter how much you keep questioning yourself. So the eating disorder unit at Basildon Hospital, I think that comes after the spell in Brighton where you just got far too ill and you had to go home.
Yeah.
Was that a good place to be or a bad place to be?
Well, so obviously I collapsed at work in Brighton, which is when I first got hospitalised. And then, yeah, moved back to Southend and got moved to Basildon Hospital. It was good. There was good aspects and bad aspects. So it was good that I had been given free healthcare. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's brilliant that I was able to even get a place there, because it's so difficult for people to even get help for eating disorders. So to be able to, I was in a bulimic group, I was in daycare, and then I also had my own one-to-one nurse. So it was great in the fact that I was with other people who also suffered with bulimia, because I didn't know, and anorexia, because I didn't really know many people who had suffered with bulimia. From like online forums and stuff, there's a lot more about anorexia than there is bulimia, and there's a lot of kind of misinformation as well. So it was nice to be around people that, like, so you're not alone, because you're so alone in this eating disorder. But then there was bad aspects as well, because you're surrounded by people and you can like pick up on different traits, and you kind of, because none of you want to get better, in a sense. Like, there's always a side of you that doesn't want to get better. You want to, but then you don't at the same time. It's like a love-hate relationship almost with your eating disorder, because you've lived with it for so long that you can't see a life without it, if that makes sense.
See, that was one of the key things I picked up from speaking to you last time.
Yeah.
Is that so many times I think the ill-educated amongst us just think, why don't you just snap out of it? But then it's that aspect of it actually being a part of you.
Yeah.
And then if you lose that, you lose kind of what makes you unique. Yeah. If that makes sense. Is that what's going through your head?
Not really unique, but like it's more, because obviously it's a form of release as well, and like also a form of self-harm. And when you build it into your everyday routine, it becomes like a habit, and so it's very, very difficult to get rid of it. It's like an addiction, basically. But anorexia and bulimia are very different. So with the bulimia, it was almost like I was being possessed by a devil. Like, I'm not even joking, it was like I was possessed. And then with the anorexia, it was almost like I had someone else in my mind, like, talking to me. So it is, like, it is all in the mind, and it's very difficult just to step out of something like that. It's like telling someone who's schizophrenic to, like, just stop being schizophrenic. It's like, they can't just do that. They need help. Do you know what I mean? So you need some, obviously, that's totally different. But, I did get a lot of people say, why don't you just eat more? Or, do you know what I mean? But it's not about the eating, it's about the control and the addiction to it as well.
In terms of the help that you got then at that eating disorder unit,
yeah,
was it good enough, basically?
No. Basically.
In a nutshell.
Like, it was... I did get some really useful things from it. So I got some really useful things. But for me personally, it didn't work. I just didn't feel like I could do it. I mean, I was still very much... So you had how it works in the daycare. You go there, you have like certain meals and snacks, and every time I'd go there, I'd be able to kind of like defeat the system almost. So they'd give me a snack and I'd hide it so I wouldn't have to eat it. Or at lunch, like, I'd just like move my food around so it looked like I'd eaten something. They wouldn't let you go to the toilet, so I'd like puke in like a water bottle or something. Like, it sounds disgusting, but you build these like weird things that you can get around it. Like, you end up lying a lot, becoming a very good liar, and just very sneaky as well. And it just gave me more time to not eat, basically, because I was somewhere that you just had to be there so I could avoid things.
Does the veganism aspect come in as well, in that they kind of saw that as maybe an excuse on your part to not eat?
Yeah,
enough?
It was very difficult being vegan and having an eating disorder, because whereas I was doing it for like animal aspect and the environment aspect, everyone saw it as a restriction thing, so it was just an excuse to restrict. When we all know that, like, veganism, you don't have to restrict at all. But yeah, they did see it as something like that. But they managed to accommodate for me, which was very good of them in the end. Like, they did get me like vegan cheeses and stuff like that, which was very nice of them. But it was very difficult to get around, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the striking things from that time at the eating disorder unit, and all those friends that you made who were going through the exact same thing as you, is how many are not with us anymore.
Yeah.
Because they passed away as a result. And that must be an incredibly tough thing to have to see and to have to deal with, again, even, at a very young age.
It even makes me like emotional just thinking about it now. So obviously you make friends there because you're all going through the same thing. So you know what one another... You understand each other. Whereas, like, no one can understand an eating disorder unless you've gone through it. Which is, like... People do try to understand it, and I really respect them for trying to understand, because it makes out, like, people with an eating disorder a lot easier. But when you can actually relate to someone because they're going through the exact same thing and torment as you are, you build this kind of like bond. And then when you just suddenly see someone who you really can relate to, and they just have passed away because of what you're going through, it is a shock to the system, but you still carry on doing it. This is the crazy thing. Like, so one of my really good friends there, like, I could just connect with her so much. And then, like, a few weeks later, I got told that she'd died from a heart attack. And she was bulimic, like, quite severe bulimic, same as me. And it just absolutely broke me, because, like, I didn't have her in my life anymore. And it was because of this eating disorder. It just shows you how severe they can get.
I mean, yeah, when you hear you talk about that and all those things you have to deal with, it's just piling on... thing after thing after thing on top of everything, and yet you're still kind of in that possessive state that you were talking about.
Even for example, we were in a group session once and a lady came in with bulimia, and she was like, this is what bulimia does to you. And she took out her teeth, and she was like my age, and she's got no teeth because of the bulimia. And like, you could see that her whole throat was completely swollen, like chipmunk cheeks, like everyone when you have bulimia has that. But and it just messed her up so much. But we were shocked. It was a shock factor. But half an hour later went and started throwing up again. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's something that you can't shock out for your system.
Exactly.
It's very technical. You need your mind basically rewiring to be able to defeat it.
And this is something I kind of really want to home in on, and this aspect of the bulimic binge.
Yeah.
Because it's something that I didn't fully understand when I first heard about it. And I don't think enough people probably do understand fully what it is. So I don't know if you want to take us through kind of what that cycle is like to go through.
Yes, but it's awful.
I mean, it is shocking.
Yeah,
in a lot
like
of ways.
when people, obviously I've said this before, but like when people think of a binge, they think, oh, I've just eaten like half a packet of biscuits or something like that. That's a binge for them, or a pizza and a couple of treats or something like that.
It's a lot bigger than that.
It's a hell of a lot bigger than that. So you'd start off, so I'll take you through the cycle. So basically you start off, your self-worth is already like through the floor. Like you hate yourself basically. So when you feel depressed, people tend to turn to food. So I guess it's like a comfort or something. But then it goes to a stage where it's like you're being possessed and you can't stop. You physically cannot stop yourself. And so I would go for like an hour just eating everything. Like I'm talking about like 3 boxes of cereal, like a whole loaf of bread, like everything. And you'd find ways to make it easier to eat as well. Your stomach feels like it is going to split and like explode. I'm not, and that feeling is awful, like absolutely awful. You'd say you'd like do some disgusting things, like you'd soak bread in milk just so that it would like go down easier, so that you could bring it up easier, if you're know what I'm saying. You'd eat things that you wouldn't normally eat, so like I'd eat start eating loads of carbs, loads of sugary things. Obviously I was vegan as well, but I'd even eat things that weren't vegan. Like this is a shocking thing, like because I was like, my head was just not there.
It's just about eating everything you can find.
Yeah, I wasn't me anymore. I just grabbed anything as quick as I could, get it down so that I can get up as quick as I can. Yeah, and it was awful. Even like some people at the unit would tell me that they even used to eat things in their bin because they'd eaten everything in their kitchen. Do you know what I mean? This is how disgusting it got. You'd eat frozen food. I remember eating frozen food. Like, you can't even put yourself in that situation. And then obviously you kind of like click out of it all of a sudden, as if like someone's just hypnotized you and they've clicked you out of it. And you've like, what the did I just do? Like, what just happened? You feel absolutely disgusting. You've like, I can't even put it to words. And so you have to get it out because you want your stomach to be empty. Like you can't believe what you've just done. You run to the toilet, you throw up, like as much, like so viciously, it's horrible. Like at first, I guess some people like stick their fingers down their throat or whatever, but because I did it so many times a day, I literally just tense my stomach and it would come up. I mean, I can still do it now, which is horrible, but like it's just a natural thing now, you can just do it. I'd sometimes, if I reached like the last bit and I still couldn't get anything out, I'd put like a toothbrush down my throat or stuff like that. It is awful. And I split my esophagus doing it, like that you're in such a state, there's like vomit and
is that just
everywhere.
The regularity of it, that's is that why it, you ripped your esophagus essentially?
Yeah, just doing it like 14 times a day. Do you know what I mean? Like it's going to take a toll eventually. Your stomach is in bits. But the problem is like you do all that, you obviously haven't got everything up, but you try, you then take like tablets to, you know, oh, it's just awful. But yeah, and then straight after that, you're hungry again because you've just like got most of it up, but you're still, you're a bit hungry. So this cycle starts again because you feel disgusting. So you're like turning to food again. So that's how the cycle goes. And it just goes round and round and round because you feel so disgusting and guilty for throwing up. So it goes back to food again. And it's just like, this cycle is just so hard to break. I'd go from like say 6 p.m. right through to like 4 in the morning, literally doing
just going through the same cycle,
going through
time
the same
and time again.
Cycle. Like my place was a state because of it. My mum ended up having to put a lock on the kitchen door just to stop me. Do you know what I mean? And just speaking about it, like I used to be very embarrassed about it because it's not a nice thing to do. Like it's not attractive at all. But I feel like people need to know about this because, and like what it really is like, because there's nothing really out there to show what bulimia is really like, the harsh realities of it.
What struck
it's
me
not
is,
pretty.
Is the violence of it,
it's
more than
so
anything
violent,
else.
So violent. Like you look at yourself in the mirror after being sick and you're just, it's like, who even am I? Like, what am I? And it is self-harming yourself because you're absolutely killing yourself. Yeah.
And mentally, what does that do to you as well? Do you just think, you know, what's the point? What's the point in me?
You just want to die. Like, it came to a stage where I just couldn't cope anymore. My mum would find me on the bathroom floor, like, in my own vomit, just, like, lying there, collapsed, because I couldn't keep going. And it comes to a point where I did just try and take my life because it was too much to cope with, basically.
What changed your mind in the end on that occasion?
Take my life?
Yeah.
So I did try, and then I got taken to hospital. Obviously, it wasn't enough to kill me, which was so lucky because it was stupid. Like, everyone says it's such a stupid and selfish thing, but when you're in that state, like, you can't see any way out. Like, there's no way out. You try and think about your mum, your dad, your family, and how they would, like, think. But when you're just... You just can't go on anymore. Do you know what I mean? And you're so alone as well. But then just seeing, like, my mum with me and how much, like, I've put her through, it was just like, I really need to change things. I really need to get help. Like, this... I was, like... 18, lying in a hospital bed, like in the cardiac unit, like every week. Do you know what I mean? Surrounded by old people. I'm like, what is going on? This is like not what a teenager should be doing at this age. And so yeah, that's when I applied for funding to go to the Maudsley to get help.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll touch on the Maudsley in a minute, but I just want to focus on that loneliness aspect. Is that one of the biggest things to deal with at that time, that you've got no one, or you feel like you've got no one to turn to?
Yeah, I guess it's because, like, no one really understands it. Like, I tried giving all my family and friends, like, things to tell them what the eating disorder is like, but they still didn't really get it, and I could see that it was really difficult. Like, more took it on for my mum, because she was always, like, a rock for me. But because she felt like she was a part of it, why it happened to me, which it wasn't at all. It was just like...
But that's natural. She kind of blames herself a
lot
of the time.
Yeah, and we were so close that she kind of comes in sympathy with me a lot of the time. So she started, like, taking on eating disorder aspects. So when I was anorexic, she would really restrict as well. So she became very underweight. When I became bulimic, she'd start binging, but she wouldn't purge. So, like, seeing it affect my mum so much as well, and seeing that I've kind of, like, almost passed it on to her in a sense, because we're so connected, it was really sad to see that. And my relationship with just everyone just pretty much ended. I had no one because I'd pushed everyone away from me. I wanted to be in my own bubble. I didn't want anyone near me because I didn't want it to affect them. And I didn't feel like it. Who would want to know someone who was bulimic? That's what I thought. Do you know what I mean? Who would want to know someone who throws up all the time? Or I wouldn't even be able to go out without doing it. So I just thought, what's the point?
Yeah, it's that mindset of you were so disgusting yourself. How could anyone else think differently
about
you?
I can't love myself. How can someone else love me?
Yeah, like, it's just a never-ending struggle inside your head all the time.
And the more you're lonely, the more you're just, like, going to keep going. And
it builds up and it builds up.
Exactly.
So when you get referred to the Maudsley Hospital, did that essentially save your life getting that place?
Essentially, yeah, it did. Like, obviously, I had a lot of heart problems. I was wired to a heart monitor most of the time because my heart rate went down to 30 beats per minute, which is obviously very low. And I'd just faint all the time, etc. So yeah, being in the Maudsley just really changed things for me, in the fact that I was having one-to-one. It wasn't in a group anymore, so I wasn't with anyone else able to take on different, like, things. I wasn't surrounded in that negative mindset anymore. And I was having proper help. Like, I was having CBT, cognitive behavioural therapy. I was also part of the Freed project as well. And at the time, I didn't think it was going to help, because you've got such a negative mindset anyway. I mean, I've always tried to stay as optimistic as I can. That's why I've always wanted to try and get help, because you can only get better if you help yourself at the end of the day. No one else is going to... Like, you've got to go for it. So I did really try hard to, like, put myself out there. I had my own dietitian as well, which did help, and they, like, obviously helped me with my feet, like, yeah, with veganism, they helped as well. So yeah, it was amazing. And the place as well, it's they take more of a holistic approach, so that's where I felt like it really did work for me.
How long did you spend there in total?
So it was, I only got funding for a year's treatment. Before that, I was with Southwark Mental Health. And then, yeah, I got a year in the Maudsley, and then because I was still very much ill after the treatment, they extended it for a few more months, and that's when I really started seeing that it got better. I think it was when I started, I had a month off from the Maudsley after my treatment, and I was more on my own, and then I went back again, like, not as regular, but I started getting better from then, I think, because I wasn't as so dependent anymore. So
do you have to still deal with life's normal struggles, like university work and family as well, as all of that stuff that you're dealing with in the Maudsley at the same time?
Yeah, so I had to, obviously I was still at uni at the time. It was really good because the Maudsley was literally 5 minutes from my uni, so it was really, really good. But yeah, I still had that. My dad's still very much ill at the time. I was still trying to be a normal student, but I couldn't. I never went out at all because I was scared of all, like, just
that kind of leads me on to my next question, is that when you're still studying essentially and trying to make friends with a lot of new people,
yeah,
does the fact that you're coming in and out of a mental hospital essentially, do you feel a little ashamed of that?
Yeah, I was a bit, because I felt like I could never have a proper university experience because I was just in hospital most of the time. And it did take on effect with my uni a lot. And especially as I was in halls as well, being bulimic in halls is not good. Like, when you share a kitchen, no. I ended up having to buy a lot of food for my housemates, let's just say. I did have my own, like, ensuite and stuff, which was good and bad at the same time. But it was very difficult to deal with, especially as I didn't have any support there in terms of, like, family. So, yeah, it was very difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. But this is a bit where we get to turn on to the positive stuff,
yeah,
and sort of the comeback to where you are now. After you left the Maudsley, why did you then turn to the gym and to sport in general?
Well, basically, so obviously I've always been in sport, as I said. I used to play
football as well.
Yeah, I played football for Southend Manor, then turned to Southendians, and then Wake Green Ladies. So I've been playing football since I was like 6 years old. Like, I love it. Also played cricket, basketball. I was proper into everything. For me to end my football because I was anorexic, like, I had to stop because of being anorexic. I couldn't keep up with the training. I was being knocked over all the time, breaking bones, you know what I mean? So to stop that absolutely killed me, like, broke my heart. And then when I felt like after the Maudsley, I was like, I need to get into something again because I want to get that strength back. So I thought, oh, I'll go to the gym. So what happened was, the gym in Southwark, they give you, if you've got a mental illness, they give you a free pass. So you have free gym membership, which I think is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And more places should do that. And so it gave me, well, I'm getting free gym membership, why not use it? So then I thought, okay, I'm going to head to the weights. Why not? Like, I saw programs online and whatever, and thought, oh, I'll try this. It's got a structure to it. The structure's good. Let's try it. Picked up the weights. First session, absolutely loved it. Like, I got this rush of adrenaline, and it wasn't cardio either, because I'd obviously been into cardio a lot before to burn and, like, weight loss and everything, but I wanted to build muscle now and be strong again. And I just, like, yeah, got into the weights, and after that it was just, I couldn't stop, like, honestly couldn't stop.
That aspect about building muscle and hitting, yeah, the weights, was that because you didn't want to look like the stereotypical anorexic slash former anorexic
slash vegan
yeah,
pretty much. It was like, I'd seen, like, people on Instagram and stuff, and they just looked so healthy. And even in the vegan community, people were so healthy and into their fitness. And I was just like, I want to be healthy and fit. Like, I was, because obviously when I came out the Maudsley, I was no longer underweight, but I was a little bit like, I thought, oh, I just want to, like, get into shape now. This is the opportunity for me to, and find something else to do. And obviously when you have an eating disorder, you have a kind of, like, this mindset where you go to a little bit extreme, and I did go to extremes with it, I'm not going to lie. I did start going every day, like, of the week, and it got a little bit too much when I needed to start incorporating resting. And when I started resting, I saw more benefits when I started adding in rest days. Then I was like, okay, so this is something that I don't have to go too extreme to. I can work out and then have rest days as well. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, it was just the best thing I've ever done. Yeah.
I mean, is it a struggle to find that right balance rather than going OTT every single time?
It is, yeah. Like, I still sometimes go a bit over the top, but it's because I love it. I love doing it. It's not for any other, like, negative reasons. It's always going to, like, positive. Now, and it wasn't just, like, going to the gym, it wasn't just to look good or for aesthetics. It was actually more of a mental thing for me. So
is it
was
a stress
more,
relief essentially?
Yeah, basically it was somewhere to go, get out of the house, go and release stress, release any tension, things that are going in my life that aren't structured. I was able to just go to the weights, be in my zone and focus on me, which is something that I hadn't done for years. Like, I hadn't practiced any form of self-love for years, and doing that and yoga just absolutely helped me so much. So yeah, obviously it was nice to, like, be able to build muscle and look good, but for me it was totally a mental thing.
So obviously there's the powerlifting now as well, the competitive aspect. Who introduced you to that, and what was it that kind of pointed your direction in that way?
Mate, it's so weird, like, so I started obviously lifting weights and then found that, oh okay, I'm pretty strong, but like I started filming stuff and putting it on my Instagram and then building my Instagram into more of a fitness thing instead of food and that kind of thing. And then some people were like commented saying, oh, you're actually really strong, you know, like you should consider powerlifting. I was like, what the hell is powerlifting? Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So I looked into it and then I was like, oh, okay, this looks interesting. I'm just going to go for it because I love a challenge. So I started looking at different clubs in Southend, London, and I found one right near me and I thought, okay, I'm just going to go along and go to it. And so I went along and the guy was like, so why do you want to do powerlifting? I was like, I've never done it before and I want to try it. And he was like, okay, come along to one of our trainings and see how you find it. And yeah, from then I just like a month, like probably like a few weeks in, I was like, I want to start competing. And they literally laughed at me. They were like, but you've just been doing it for like 2 weeks and you want to compete. And I was like, yeah, I want to go in. I just want to do it. Like, I feel so confident now. And so I did it and yeah, I started competing.
And the competitions you've done as well so far.
Yeah.
Incredible results too.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Like, I'd only been training properly for like a month. And then went in for my first competition, Greater London District Competition, and yeah, came third overall and qualified for nationals, which is absolutely mind-blowing, like considering where I came from and then now I'm doing powerlifting. It's like so surreal, honestly.
Exactly. And you say you love a challenge.
Yeah,
perhaps one of the biggest challenges you set yourself is climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. Yeah. Which is it in a matter of months now.
It is. I'm such a nutter, honestly. Like, so as soon as I started, I built strength very quickly. Like, if people have seen my transformation photos on like Instagram and stuff, like I did do quite a big transformation very quickly, which is amazing. So I just thought, now I feel strong, I want to just go for it. And I was actually given this opportunity, like presented with it by someone. They were like, we're looking for leaders to climb Kilimanjaro for charity. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like, I can do it for charity as well, because I've always loved doing that kind of thing. And to be a group leader, like, wow. So I went in for the interview and, yeah, got selected as the group leader to climb up Kilimanjaro.
Must be looking forward to that, though.
Yeah, yeah.
However daunting it might be.
I know. I am kind of, like, a little bit not scared. I'm actually more excited, to be fair, like, because I've always been into hiking and stuff like that. Like, I've hiked most of the places in England, but like nothing like in Africa, like the tallest mountain. Like, do you know what I mean?
I think Kilimanjaro is going to be a much more different challenge to the biggest hill in Essex.
Oh my god! No. Tell me about it. So yeah, and just having responsibility for other people as well is going to be a challenge. But I'm really looking forward to it, and like it's for a really great cause as well. So yeah.
What is it? Was Dig Deep? Isn't
Dig
it?
Deep? Charity, yeah. So yeah, they basically help provide clean water, toilets and like hygiene and everything like that for communities in Kenya, which is really great. And I'm like, you could actually see the work that they're doing. It's absolutely amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Also, as we record, you're just coming to an end of your university degree. There's a big showcase, I think, in a month's time.
Yeah.
Again, is that something you're finding it easy to manage and balance everything? Or is it still very much sort of you're bridging into that OTT?
Yeah, honestly, like, I always take on way too much that I can. I've always have, like, even before my eating disorder, I always take on way too much. And I know I do, but I just like to keep busy, I think, because when I'm not doing anything, I go a bit insane. so, yeah, my uni work has definitely suffered a lot. Like, I know that I could have done a lot better with it. And I am a bit disappointed in myself that I haven't been able to focus, like, my full attention on it. But, yeah, I've only got, like, a month left of uni. But I'm still going for it because I want to prove to myself that I can do it. Well,
that's the thing. If you've gone through all of that and you can come out the end having completed it, regardless of grade or anything like that, that must be something that's really...
Oh, yeah, just being able to come out with a degree after being in hospital, like, throughout the whole of university, like, would be amazing. So I just thought, I'm this far, like, I can't give up now. So, yeah, I'm gonna keep going for it and just hopefully get the best grade that I can, to be honest.
Also, your Instagram page.
Yeah.
When you first set it up, did you ever imagine it would become what it's become in terms of size and the amount of people that you're motivating and inspiring?
Not at all, honestly, not at all. Like, as soon as I started posting about eating disorder awareness and everything, I was blown away by the support, because I was so worried that I'd get so much judgment. And like, I didn't know what to expect, how people would react to it, because some people didn't know that I was even going through this. Like, my friends didn't even know that I was going through it. And yeah, so to put it out to the world, I kind of weighed it up and I was like, it's going to help so many people, because this is what I wanted when I was going through it. I wanted someone else there who understood. So I started talking about it very openly, and the more I spoke about it, the easier it became. I mean, it's always going to be a little bit hard to talk about it, but like, it became a lot easier. And then when I started getting messages and like so much support and people saying that I was their inspiration, like, that is amazing. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, it must have been daunting at the first opportunity, because you're opening yourself up and it's an incredibly vulnerable thing to do.
Yeah.
And you're basically letting people peer deep into your soul.
Yeah,
essentially.
Pretty much, yeah. Definitely. And I think I knew that I would always get like some kind of like someone say something, but I was able to cope with it a lot better now. Whereas before, because obviously I still got relapses now and again, but so I was worried that I would fall into more relapses if someone said something out of line or whatever. But to be honest, like, the amount of people that I have been able to support and help, like, yeah, it's been incredible. And yeah, just absolutely amazing, honestly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you've kind of preempted my next question, in that it's, do you still relapse? But also, how do you deal with it when you do?
So I do still have relapses now and again. Like, I feel with eating disorders, you're never fully recovered. Like, it's always still there in the back of your mind. I'm just able to deal with like certain aspects of life a lot better now, but do it through different ways, into more positive ways, instead of going to that down that hill. So I either let it out through my strength training or through some form of something else. Do you know what I mean? It's just not through bulimia, but sometimes I do slip into like bulimic ways, which you just got to pick yourself up afterwards and be like, right, that's happened, that's behind me, let's keep going.
It's that rewiring of the brain that you're talking about before.
Definitely. Like, I mean, I haven't had a relapse, I had one very recently, but that was because of like hearing about my dad and my dad's health and everything. It just got way too on top of me. But before that, I hadn't relapsed for about 5 months, which was amazing. And I mean, you just take each day step by step, like, it's baby steps the whole way. You are like, the first week when I did my first 3 days without being sick was amazing feeling for me. Like, not being sick for 3 days, I was like, oh my god, this feels so good. And then it just continues, and then you get a step back, but then you keep going. Do you know what I mean? So you just,
and so it's part of it then, accepting that it's okay to have a bad day when you do have a bad day.
Yeah.
And just letting that pass.
Definitely. You're always going to have good days and bad days, but you've just got to accept and embrace those bad days and know that there'll always be a tomorrow and you can start afresh and keep going. And just, it's just all about your mindset, changing your perspective and being grateful for the life that you've got. Like when I started doing gratitude lists, so every day I'd write some like three things that I'm grateful for that day. And that makes like some of the crappiest days, like you can find something that actually good happened. Do you know what I mean? Or even someone like saying, oh, how are you today? Like, I'm grateful for that person acknowledging me. Do you know what I mean? Like, stuff like that. It's the little things, and it really makes a difference when you start being grateful for these things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Who is your biggest inspiration?
Oh, well, I'd definitely say my mom, just because, like, how she's even been able to deal with me. I don't even know how she did that. Like, she's been my absolute rock. I'm not even joking. I know it's, like, cliche to everyone say, oh, my mom, but...
Considering the
amount that
through,
she's, I've put her through, I don't know anyone who could even go through and put up with me like that, like the state that I was in, and still be so strong for me when I was really, really weak. Like, I can't. My everything goes to her. Like, honestly, yeah, she is a massive inspiration, and she's the one who taught me to be more grateful about different things and appreciate life. I mean, she's a yoga instructor, and she's just like got that yogi nature about her. She's just been amazing, absolutely amazing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And we'll finish this off with a very big question, I suppose. Yeah. And that, obviously, you're giving advice to people every single day on your Instagram or on social media.
Yeah.
But what is the key nugget of advice you think you could dish out to someone that is going through a tough time right now? In order to help them get to a better place?
Just knowing that, like, they're not alone. They're not alone through this, and that there is help out there. And to really, like, just help yourself. I know it's really difficult to saying that as well. But also, like, just start doing little things on self-love and things like that. I mean, it's really difficult to say just one bit of advice because there's so much I want to give. But once you start focusing on yourself and changing your mindset, like, things will start getting better. And there is a way out. Like, honestly, there is a way out. And reach out to people as well. Like, just, yeah, I can't say enough.
I think you kind of hit it on the head there in that you are not alone. Because just by the two of us, for example, sitting here talking about it, we've both had our stuff, but we didn't obviously know each other when we were going through it.
Yeah.
But there are people left, right and centre who are going through their own bits.
There's
and bobs.
Always people going through something, either similar or not. Don't compare yourself to it at all, because it's all relative to that person. But, like, there's always going to be someone else going through that thing, and, like, you're not, you're just not alone for it.
Exactly.
And just knowing that there is a way out. There is a way out.
Yeah.
And not, you can just get through it, basically.
Yeah, and that's pretty much part of the point we're doing these episodes as well, just to put it out there that it's not a rare thing. And plenty of people go through it.
Yeah.
And with that, we better wrap up this particular episode. I just want to thank you, Sophia, for coming on.
Thank you.
And telling us about your incredible story.
Yeah.
From
thank you. Sorry, I ramble on a bit, but you know.
not a problem at all. And just like people are on your Instagram, on your social pages, and telling you in person as well, I guarantee someone out there listening probably pick up some sort of inspiration from hearing your story, because it is an incredible transformation.
Oh,
so thank you so much.
Cheers.